Καλημέρα, καλησπέρα, καληνύχτα. No matter where in this wild, wacky, and sometimes wonderful world you may be, thank you for making the Highbury Squad part of your day. It's a new week. It's a blank canvas. It's time to tell stories, paint football pictures. I have an epic guest who is the first of three stellar guests on the Monday Madness Drive Time show today. Let's rock and roll, squaddies.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
It is the inaugural Monday Madness Drive Time show, and I couldn't think of a better guest to join me. I know many of you will be taken by surprise by this hour and will be listening on replay or our audio platforms. Thank you to all of you who will be joining, and make sure to leave your comments in our YouTube section. But the big reveal is here. One of my favorite gooners, one of my favorite broadcasters, journalists on the planet, Mr. Jordan J. Bryan. Welcome back to Squad Central.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever in the world you're listening to this. How are we all doing? How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. How are you doing? Because it seems like you are the busiest man in showbiz. I mean, seriously.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to do. Should I put Jordan's handle up? Should I put the new show up? I mean, you are everywhere, mate, everywhere. What have you been up to?
I've been busy, man. So I'm still doing my work at Channel 4 News as their sports correspondent. But I've got a big mouth and I've got a lot of things to say, sometimes or often not always valuable to the world. But so I thought, you know what? I'm going to place myself on as many different podcasts as I can. That's my mission in life. So as I'm still doing the Forever Arsenal podcast on AFTV, big up my AFTV family. But I've set up two new podcasts since I last saw you. First, you can see on the screen there, a podcast called Not For Clicks. It's a sports podcast. It's mainly football, but we do touch in on some American sports, because some of the other guys I do it with are big NBA, NFL fans as well. And we just chop it up. We have a chat about sports and just give our views. And then I have another podcast I launched last week called Whisper It Loudly with the brilliant Darren Lewis from Daily Mirror here in the UK, and Hugh Wozencroft here at Talk Sport. That one is also sport-led, but it's also politics, cultural, art, and a little bit of foolishness at the end as well. So it's kind of just, we brought a WhatsApp group to life.
I love that. I've always said, Jordan, some of the WhatsApp group conversations would make for the best broadcasting.
100%.
Just brilliant stuff. And Darren Luce is one of my heroes, secret crush, but please give him a hug for me.
What a legend. We're recording tomorrow, so
I'll pass that on.
So good. Whisper It Loudly and Not For Clicks, my two new pods.
Okay, brilliant. And we'll remind people at the end of the show. Okay, I love this because someone just posted, here's Jordan, Suraj. Jordan about to tell us some negative stuff about Arsenal today.
listen. Do you know what's funny about this? Is that the perception or whatever it is that people have of me from AFTV is that strong, it spans into other podcasts that I'm on.
Right here.
I'm a good person. I'm just honest.
He's honest. He's very honest. And, you know, you've got to be careful what you're saying, because we've got an Arsenal icon in the house. David Hillier is listening to the show. Wow. From South Africa. David will be on the show next Monday doing Monday Madness with
David.
Me, everyone. Big up David. He's awesome. And talk about honest. He's honest and his takes are brilliant. So maybe we'll get you on a show together someday.
Oh,
that would be good.
I'd love that.
By the way, when Kev's here, I lose my manners. Our e-squaddies at ease. We have all of you in the house. We got Lynn. We've got our chief like officer, Tammy. Guna Works is back. Matthew is here. We've got Luke, we've got the Gooners pod, who after this, by the way, boys and girls, will be doing an exclusive live from the North Bank Highbury with Amy Lawrence. You're not going to want to miss that. It's the launch of a new collaborative show with the Gooners pod from Highbury to the Grove. And he will be talking to Amy Lawrence live from Highbury, which is pretty epic and pretty cool. Right, let's get stuck into some football. I'll continue to put your messages up. Carol, thanks for joining. Seb, all of our favourites are here. Right, Jordan, top five talking points. Here we go.
Shoot.
Arsenal, Brentford. We'll get your take on the game as we go through these talking points. A massive, massive win. Arsenal showing a lot more, I would say, character this season. Okay, we haven't really hit April yet. However, the mental seems to be intact. I wanted to ask you first. Last season, I felt like we floundered because we weren't used to being the hunted. And it's a young team, a manager who hasn't really been in that position before as a number one. Yes, he's been there as a number two to Pep Guardiola. And it feels like Arsenal prefer to play with that old school George Graham chip on their shoulder. Everyone hates us. We like being the hunter versus the hunted. What's your take on the mental application you're seeing and us going back on top, yes, albeit on goal difference, and being the hunted versus the hunter?
Well, I think mentality and building a strong mentality is only built over time and experience, right? And often negative experiences. And what I'm liking about what I'm seeing this season from the boys is they seem to have learned from last season. I think Mikel Arteta has massively developed as a coach. I think his tactics this season, in the first half of the season, it seemed to be about control. It seemed to be about pacing ourselves. A lot of the football Arsenal fans were telling me wasn't particularly exciting. And if you compare it to the start of last season, it wasn't. Let's just be honest. Mm-hmm. We were getting through games, but it wasn't great. But I'm going to, without having spoken to Mikel, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that that was part of the plan. I think that he learned that you can't go through a whole season at the tempo and intensity and pace that we were doing so last season for an entire year. And it feels like since Dubai, they have decided, all right, now we're going to step it up. Now we're going to go. And the goals and the games and the wins kind of show that. So I think the mentality, the strength of mentality comes from learning lessons and being able to learn from where we went wrong last season. I actually agree with you. You're one of the few people that said this, that a lot of people attribute our trip up last season to Saliba being injured. And Saliba is a massive player in our team. And of course, you take Saliba out of our team, we're going to be weaker. But I think the bigger reason for us falling off was we were just in uncharted territory. We just had a team that were relatively young, that didn't know how to deal with being in a title race and having a lead with 10 games to go. And I think that inexperience, they just didn't know how to deal with it. I think that's what blew us up. So in answer to your question, I just think that the experience comes from, and the mentality comes from experience and recognizing, okay, all right, we fell short last year. We know we can get to this point. So now it's about how do we give ourselves a chance of seeing out the whole race. We may come second again. We may come third. But what's important to me is they've learned lessons. If we blew up at the same point and made the same mistakes, that'd be disappointing. But I don't think we are. And if we don't in the league, it won't be because we've repeated the same mistakes. It'll just be because there's one, maybe two teams that are better than us.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this weekend. Like, if you lose the league on goal difference, which, you know, we've got a superior goal difference right now, you win the league on goal difference or lose it by one. I just want to riff off what you said just a little bit before we move on to our next talking point. And that is, you know, that it's fine margins, right? Winning and losing. And we've kind of failed to qualify for that Champions League, bounce back mentally, you know, gave this improbable run last season that nobody was really expecting. Now we find ourselves, and I think when you saw Tottenham and Villa play yesterday, I think it was evident the gap between those teams that used to be our rivals over the last few years, how we've moved on from them. And it's Clive from Arsenal Vision made put up a tweet yesterday talking about how we've used to watch these games and just crave to be in them, crave to be a part of them. And I responded to him and I said, yes, absolutely. But also believe that you can beat them, which we have done this season. And mentally, that's massive, Jordan. Going into like the next fixture, there's a massive gap. Are you concerned about that gap? Yes. If you were Mikel, would you take him back to Dubai before City? Just give me your take on that real quick.
It's a good question because I am concerned. I was thinking about it this morning. I didn't realize it's nearly 3 weeks. I think it's at least 2.5 weeks. And I think at a time when Arsenal are in their groove, Arsenal are in their rhythm, I don't think you want breaks. I know a lot of people in previous years have said they would rather get knocked out of certain cups because you get more rest time, you get more time to recuperate. I don't think teams that win titles, they don't move like that. But teams that win titles want to play every 2-3 days. They're in a groove. They don't want to train, they want to play. And David Hillier, will tell you when you get him on next month, players want to play, especially when you're playing well. So for me, I am concerned, and I'm concerned that it does break our rhythm. But just quickly, I think with the Dubai thing, would I take them away to Dubai again? Probably would, but I'm also slightly concerned that it seemed like something very special happened in Dubai, and I don't know if you could just replicate it every time there's a gap. So I'm not sure. What I will quickly also say is, though, if I'm Mikel Arteta, I'm doing everything in my power to ensure that Saka, Rice, Gabriel or Saliba and Odegaard don't go to the internationals with Brazil, England, France and Norway. I think if you can get 3 or 4 of that 5 just named to somehow pull out of those internationals, I'm doing all I can to get those guys out of those games. Because for England anyway, the games aren't important. They're friendlies. Mm-hmm. It's against Belgium and Brazil. So if I'm Mikel Arteta, I'm saying to Gareth Southgate, I'm sorry. You can't have Saka and Rice for this one. Or you can have one of them for what? Do you know what I mean? Because I'm just concerned.
Yeah, no.
A big part of our, someone in the comments said it, a big part of our strength is we've managed to really get most of, I think everyone's fit apart from Tommy and Timber at the moment. And we don't want to lose those key players at this point. So I would try and take them away, you know, potentially to just kind of keep them warm, keep them playing, keep them focused. Because I think the gap is concerning for me, for sure.
It's the old school Sir Alex Ferguson, right? Yeah. Mourinho, Ferguson, all brilliant at doing things like that, pulling their players. And you're right, there's just so much at stake right now. And you lead in nicely. I was going to ask you this towards the end, but I'll ask you now. Because you mentioned Rice, Saka, you mentioned the England players, of course. And there's a lot of kind of, you know, I don't know, there's so much belief in this squad, and I believe they believe.
Yes.
And I believe because they believe. And the value of the new signings has been massive, especially in the last few games for Kai Havertz, but throughout the entire season for Declan Rice. Which is the player, in your opinion, which is hard, I think it's a hard choice to make, Jordan, that we absolutely cannot afford to get injured?
I think it's Declan Rice. I know some will say Saka. I get that. Some will say Saliba. I get that as well. Some will say the captain Odegaard. He's a one-man machine in that final third. I think it's Declan Rice. Because I think with Declan Rice, you've got a rounded midfielder that contributes to every element of our play. A lot of talk has been about the front three or the three behind striker. So it's, you know, Saka, Martinelli and Odegaard in recent weeks, right? All the goals we've scored. I get that. For me, the more important triangle or the more important threesome is Saliba, Gabriel, Rice. I'm a big believer that defences win titles, goals win games. And I think if you break up that triangle and you take out Declan Rice, I think that even despite having the best partnership in the centre-back partnership in the league, I think you not only lose that protection for those two, but I think you actually lose a presence in the centre of the pitch anyway. Plus, you lose a goal threat. Let's have it right. Corners and goals that he's delivered in recent weeks, you lose a goal threat as well. So I think Declan Rice is the one player that we can't do without. And it'll be just typical of Arsenal's luck to the one player that seems to never, ever be injured in this final period, get injured for whatever reason. So I think there's 3 or 4 key players for sure. I think the most, if there's one player you're giving me that we can't do without, I think it is Declan Rice.
I can hear fans everywhere saying, Jordan, bite your tongue. Also, he was injured before Dubai at the start of the season a little bit, wasn't he? So I'm hoping that we've kind of got that out.
No, you're
out
right. Wasn't it 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah. And he is a very, very special player and a player who, you know, we've struggled over the seasons to have midfielders who score goals. And now, you know, we're in this position, you know, you've got the beauty of the maestro who conducts the orchestra in Odegaard. You've got Declan Rice scoring goals as well. But just to riff off what you're saying again, do you think that protectiveness that you talk about, because I was discussing that with David Hillier, like the back four are amazing. They have a great connection with David Raya now. There seems to be a confidence that has been building season after season. But when Jorginho has added another layer of, I think, the protectiveness in terms of how he can keep the ball, how he passes the ball. I mean, the sweeping passes, the chip over the defense at the weekend, very underrated. A lot of Arsenal fans were coming at him. And I think that's all to do with Chelsea signings, him and Kai Havertz, this stigma attached to that. And of course, the disaster that we saw in Willian before and being left with some PTSD there. How important is he? Can he play every week, Jordan? But also, how important has he become to kind of be able to do the things that you were just talking about?
He's become very important. And I think on the pitch, I think his intelligence and his vision when we have the ball and dominate games, he's probably the most important player we have when we have the ball, in that he's the one that can unlock a door. Odegaard seems to play about 10, 15 yards further forward. But in terms of, he's our Santi Cazorla. He's our Santi Cazorla, I think, in that sense. He's very deep, but he's the one that actually triggers the move. He makes the key pass that leads to the pass, that leads to the assist, that leads to the goal. The pass he made on the weekend for Kai Havertz, who, shocking miss. I'm sorry. I know Kai Havertz, we love him, and he done well, got the winner.
That was shocking.
It's a shocking miss, man. You've got to bury that. I didn't even hit a target. But that was his pass. And I don't think... Maybe Odegaard. There's no one else in that team that can make that pass. I think his impact is also massive off the field of play. Let's not forget, this is a guy that's won the European Cup and the Euros. It's a guy that's experienced. So I think off the field of play, when you hear him in interviews, you get the sense this is someone that is a calming influence on a team that have won nothing. We've won nothing yet. But yeah, I think I can see him being a coach. If I'm Mikel Arteta, I'm looking at him and saying, in 2 or 3 years' time, we lost Mikel Arteta. Let's not do it again. There's clearly brains there. There's an intelligent guy there that I think could be used. I don't know about being a manager. We'll see. But it's definitely a coach in there. I think we can get that from him. And can he play every game? No, he can't. I said when we signed him, I thought it was a very good signing, but you've got to pick and choose the games that you play. He's playing well at the moment, Sophie, because we've got legs around him and we dominate the ball. In the games where we don't dominate the ball and you don't have legs around him, he looks horrendous. So I think there's key games you've got to put him in, and we've done that well so far. But no, I don't think you can. Declan Rice every game, Saka every game, Odegaard every game. I think Jorginho's skill sets mean that for certain games, I think he'll be a passenger.
Does he have the legs for tomorrow night against Porto with all that Champions League experience, which I thought, by the way, Mikel's mistake, and he hasn't made many this season, and I don't know if it's a mistake, it's a choice. Not having Jorginho in Europe with that experience, I thought was a miss. But does he play tomorrow night?
I would, because I think we'll have the ball. I think we'll have the, I don't think Porto are going to come to play. I think we'll have the ball. And I think when you have the ball, I'm concerned about tomorrow. I know we'll get to it in a little bit, but I'm quite nervous about tomorrow. But I think someone like him is someone that I trust in that sort of game where I don't think there'll be a lot of goals, and I don't think it's going to be a, you know, famous last words, we'll win 6-0 now. we do. But I don't think it's going to be, and I think as Arsenal, as a fan base, we have to almost get the last handful of games out of our heads and not expect every game to be 10 goal scoring chances, 5 scored. Because it won't be like that. And I think this is Europe. And Porto are not a European giant, but they're seasoned. They're not some little team that you've never heard of. Porto are a European seasoned team, and they've got a lead. So I think someone like him, with his pedigree, with his know-how, with his intelligence, I actually think tomorrow is a game for him.
Yeah. We're going to get to Dark Hearts and Shithousery in just a second. Just to kind of wrap up that game, a player that many of us have loved for so long, and my goodness, it was one of those moments where you just wanted the ground to swallow you up. You mm-hmm. wanted to disappear. You wanted to kind of get a really super fast spaceship that could even take you as far as Pluto, Jordan. And I can't even imagine how Rambo felt in that moment. I mean, he got to be cocky a little afterwards with the fans who were singing "There's Only One David Raya." It was just absolutely calamitous. He got a lot of love from his teammates, which was beautiful to see, and even a lot of love from Mikel Arteta afterwards, because perhaps in the second half, he redeemed himself with some incredible saves. You mentioned Kai Havertz missing an absolute sitter. Saliba mentioned making mistakes in his post-game interview and that how he's cost games. Havertz did the same. The rallying around Ramsdale, who is very beloved at the club. Keeper errors versus forward misses. I asked the NBC crew this at the weekend, and Stephen Warnock, who used to play for Liverpool, and Robbie Musto, kind of agreed with a keeper makes a mistake, it's the end of the world. A forward misses a chance and could miss a few chances. They get away with it, maybe because they can redeem themselves mm-hmm. more than the keeper. Talk to me about first Rambo's mistake, redeeming himself in your eyes, yes or no, and the question keeper errors versus forward misses.
So first of all, I think it's a shocker. We want to support our boy. He's part of our club. It's probably his last game for the club. And I think that there's a lot of disrespect that's been put around Ramsdale's name all season. I hate this narrative that's built up that his distribution and his kicking isn't brilliant. I heard it when Raya first came in. I'm like, last season, Rambo's kicking and distribution for me was amazing. Now, is David Raya's kicking better? Maybe it is. That doesn't mean that Ramsdale's kicking is poor. Ramsdale's kicking was brilliant last year, so I don't like the narrative that's been brought up around him. However, it's a shocker, and I think we've got to call it out. We've got to call it what it is. I've heard a lot of my friends talking over the weekend about how he's a victim of a man that has succumbed to an environment Arteta's created, which has meant that he's a nervous wreck, he's got no form, he's not warm. And it's not like you're coming in. It's not like in most scenarios, so where if you're a goalkeeper and you come in, you're coming in because the number one is suspended for 3 games, or that you're coming in and the number one is injured for 2 months. You're coming in knowing that's your only game. So you know whatever you do, however well you perform, it doesn't really matter. You're not playing again. So that is difficult. However, I do think that there's credence in that argument. But for me, it's just a shocking bit of play. And yes, I want my keeper to stick to what we do and how we play. But it's not even like the ball's come to him, so and it's a bad first touch. It's a good first touch. Yeah. Just distribute it. He's just got a bit cocky and a bit complacent. And I think you could argue, again, Arteta's created an environment where he's a nervous wreck. But I'm not going to put this one on Arteta too much. I think the responsibility, the bulk of it, lies with Ramsdale. Now, he redeemed himself in the second half, arguably, because he made 2 brilliant saves. I'm not sure the Tony one is going in. I think it's swerving left and I think it's swerving away. So I'm not totally
Jordan,
convinced.
That was going in. That was going
if,
in.
If you look at the replay from the Brentford goal, so you're facing the Arsenal goal, I think it's swerving wide, but okay, let's say it's going in. It's a brilliant save. I think the second one is better, personally. The one at the near post, that's a better save for me.
Mm-hmm.
But to your question about keeper errors versus forward misses, if you're asking me what the bigger error is, Kai Havertz one-on-one or Ramsdale's blunder, I think Kai Havertz is a bigger miss. I think that's a bigger error than Ramsdale's error. Because he's one-on-one, you didn't hit the target. You can't not hit the target. As a professional footballer, one-on-one, it's awful. So I have a bit of sympathy for goalkeepers in that sense. Because as you say, goalkeepers, if you mess up, well, Ramsdale actually did, but in normal cases, you don't get a chance to redeem yourself. And it's normally terminal, where strikers can miss a sitter and they can get another chance. And if you miss a sitter, you can still win. Goalkeepers mess up, you normally lose. But it's a shame that he's going out like this. I hope that's not how he's remembered. Because last year, I had Ramsdale in my top 3 players at Arsenal. He was in my top 3 players.
He made team of the year, didn't he? He made Premier League team of the year.
He was brilliant. So I do think there was a bit of disrespect around Ramsdale generally, but regards to Saturday, I think he's got to hold that. I didn't like the whole biting back. I know the Brentford fans were giving it to him. I didn't like that from Ramsdale. I just think you've messed up. Just stay focused.
Just
shut up and just get with your game. Let's get out of here. But just super briefly as well, and I want to ask you a question. How much of the interview that he gave with Ian Wright last year, where he revealed he suffers from lapsing concentration, do you think is relevant to that incident? Do you think that's, they're totally separate, or do you think that that is an example of him losing concentration?
Self-admitted, right? And I don't think Mikel Arteta liked that. I don't think they particularly liked the Nick Ramsdale interview on this this channel either. Yeah. And I don't think that was why Aaron was dropped. That decision was made long ago before Nick came on this show to talk about it. The interview with Ian Wright and Ian Wright's response to what he said just kind of was telling in that, dude, you don't admit that out loud. Even if you're thinking it, you don't admit it. I know there's a gif going around of, I can't remember if it's the Southampton game where there's a bird or a pigeon, you know, he's kind of like looking and he misses the shot. I think we've also fallen in love with, and we're going to talk about the dark arts and the shithousery. And it's really hard to hit him with that stick when we've craved players who've been weak sauce, apathetic, Bellerin was respected, but he was weak sauce. Even Koscielny, Vermaelens, these types of players, Ozil, they were just weak sauce players. Mm-hmm. And now we have players who are getting more involved in putting pressure on the referee, getting stuck in with the opponent, mastering the dark arts a la Benjamin White. I think he's brilliant. He's becoming brilliant at it. So that's part of his character, Jordan. If you take that away from him, which I think Mikel wanted to do a little bit, it changes. It's like Rooney, like his self-admittance in terms of how he behaved on the pitch or, getting angry or what these things. You can't change a man. I know that. You can't change character. And that's what makes him so good.
I'm with you, but do you think that's why Mikel Arteta ultimately has brought in David Raya? Because it's that 1% that he's like, I love you, Rambo, but it's the fine margins. Southampton last year and this now, it's those fine margins that I just can't risk.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. And I think, yes, there's a history of, the fact that Mikel was chasing David Raya for a while and wanting to play a particular way. And you've seen season after season, the players he's brought in, his inches are getting closer and closer to the place that he wants to be. The goalkeeper position, definitely one of those. But like this save that he made against Tottenham in that 3-2 was very similar, I thought, to the header that he tipped over, which I thought was a brilliant save. The Leicester save now seems like a long time ago. It was in his first season. But he saved us for a long time. And what I don't like sometimes is how some players become a scapegoat at the Arsenal. Not so long ago, this guy was the scapegoat. Xhaka has been a scapegoat. We scapegoat our players. And I feel like Rambo went from beloved, he could save anything, to then philosophy changing, playing out from the back, playing with the feet, and him becoming like obsolete to a lot of Arsenal fans. But I mean, does he stay? This is becoming an interesting conversation, I think.
I think he will go. But I floated last night on Forever Arsenal. I said to the guys, just to be a little bit kind of provocative, because I didn't fully believe this myself, but I asked the guys, if you look at the Liverpool-Man City game yesterday, both teams finished with their number twos on the pitch. And both of their number twos looked very, very, very good. So good number twos are hard to find. I floated the idea, because the issue for me with Ramsdale is how Arteta dealt with it. He pretty much lied to Ramsdale and lied to us, the fans. But if this summer he says to Ramsdale, look, I want to keep you. David Raya is number one. He's my number one. But I want to keep you. You will get 25 games this season. I wonder if that is worth putting to Ramsdale, him saying, okay, I want to stay. Or as the guys in the pod last night said, he's just too good to be a number two and he should be allowed to go.
Mm. I think there's a comment I just want to bring up from Andy. You guys are trying hard. You're trying very hard, guys, but Arteta got it spot on with Ramsdale. We're all the Ramsdale lovers now. Stop that. There's nothing more I don't like to use the word hate, but I really hate it when fans do this. Why can't you love a player, have an opinion about him, continue to love him or not? Like, what is this continual crap? It's the same thing with Havertz. Havertz wasn't playing great at the start of the season. You know, don't come at people who have an opinion about a player who's not playing great. And I think it's unfair, like, the way people have kind of attacked Dan Potts over that. And, you know, Pottsy's a good friend of the show. Sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. It's the same thing with all of us. Mm. But this, like, where are all the Ramsdale lovers now? I still love Ramsdale. Mm-hmm. I adore him. And, you know, I know people will say, oh, because you're friends with his dad. No, I adore Saka. I adore Benjamin White. Gabriel's probably my favorite player this season. I fucking love this team. So let's stop nitpicking at each other because of our opinions. Jordan, I mean, I know this is what we do. This is what broadcasting's about. But sometimes it's just like everyone wants to be right versus admit they're wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And then they want to pick on people that have an opinion about something. It just drives me insane.
No, it really does. I hear it. Yeah. I'm with it.
Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now. Let's talk about dark arts and shithousery. Why don't we? Because I think if there's a player, I think Ramsdale has done that well when he's playing well. I agree that, you know, coming out the other side the way he did in the second half, giving it large, was probably not the best thing to do. But a player who many Arsenal fans have completely fallen in love with and who isn't being picked for England and is probably one of the best right backs, not only in the Premier League, I think in Europe, and I don't believe that to be an exaggeration, is Benjamin White. He's evolved since Dubai. He was having a stinker of a season, Jordan, really. Yeah. But he and Gabriel Magalhães, I think, are really good at this. And I love seeing our players not back down. I really adore it more than anything this season. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the Arsenal mentally and part of the revolution mentally kind of getting more smarter about dark arts and shithousery?
Well, I first of all, I think it was needed. And I remember making a point a few months back. Actually, it was after the Liverpool game. Was it the Cup or League One? It was the league game at Anfield. I remember saying to the boys, Luis Diaz, for me, I think he's a brilliant player, first of all, but he's an absolute see you next Tuesday. And you know what? I like that. He wound us up. He was leaving, you know, flicks on people. He's a nasty piece of work. But I said to the boys, you know what? We need some of that. We need some C's and P's. I'm not going to curse on your show, but we need some C's and P's.
I just did. It's okay.
It's your show. You do what you want.
Kevin tells me off when I use the F-bomb. And Andy, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, sorry. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. It's not just you, and you were making a point, but carry on, Jordan.
It's all right. I just think we need some more C's and P's. And I think we've got that. Kai Havertz. He's a C. He's nasty. He's dirty. Mm. Like, you know, what's his name? Jorginho. He's dirty. Don't mess with Jorginho. He will leave one on you. And the fact that we've now got Ben White that chucks it, that kind of talks to you through the game and just tells you about yourself, I love it. Now, there's a balance to be struck because ultimately, if you go too far the other way, you'll just get stupid red cards in big games, right? But I like the fact now that we've got players that won't be bullied. You can't come to the Emirates and play my team now and just we'll roll over. No. If you want to play football, we can play football and beat you. If you want to fight and battle, we can do that as well. I like that. And so I'm here for it. And Benjamin White is someone that I think he's quite nasty in his shithousery, not in a physical way, but in a very verbal way. I can tell this. He's the sort of person that will just talk to you through the game and just tell you, you can't beat me. You can't get past me. Just pass the ball off because you can't get past me. And I think to your point about him being one of the best right backs in Europe, I think that's fair. I think that's more than fair. And the England point, I don't think it's him not being picked for England. I've got a theory about Ben White in England. I think it's more on him. I reckon what, because we never know what happened. We never knew what happened when he left the England squad. And what I think has happened is because he's openly said, I don't really watch football. I'm not really engaged in football unless I'm playing it. I think he went away. And when you don't care about something that much, your tolerance levels are very, very low. So if he's not playing and the coaches and the coaching staff are telling him things that he doesn't care for, I reckon he probably just thought, you know what? Sod this. You know, I don't need this. I'm not desperate to be here. So you know what? And at England international camp, you've got to be proving constantly, you want to be there and I want to be the right back. And I think Benjamin White is like, you know what? If you pick me, great, I'll play. If you don't, nah. That's what I think has happened. So I don't think he's not being picked. I don't think there's an agenda against him not being picked. I just genuinely think that he gives off the vibe within the camp that he just doesn't give a shit. And I think that that's not conducive to an international squad all pulling in the direction of wanting to be the best. So I think that's just my theory. It's just my
theory. I love your theory. I love it. And at the time when he said that, I was like, how can you not like watching football? But then I think to myself, my partner publishes books, right? The last thing she wants to do when she comes home is read a book, right?
It's
crazy. Like I worked in the entertainment industry. It's like film after film after film after film. When I come home, I don't want to watch a film. I just want to switch off, you know, and do something totally different. I get your theory, yeah.
It's like that episode of Friends. It's one of the early ones where I think it's George Clooney. He's a doctor, gynecologist.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's on a date with Rachel. And I forgot how it ends, but basically she says, oh, someone, you're gorgeous. Why do you not have a girlfriend? And he says, look, well, in my line of work, once you've seen one, two, and then it's like an awkward silence. And they're like, okay, I get it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's the same point. You know, if you do a job for some people, you'd be surprised how many footballers don't follow football and don't love football. They're just good at it. It's a job to many footballers. It's just a job they're good at. So it doesn't surprise me that he doesn't love football or follow it, because it's a job to him. And I don't bash him for that. But anyway, back to the point. He's brilliant. I thought he was the best player on the pitch on Saturday. I thought he was great. And I think we're going to need him to bring this form for the next 10, 15 games, because right about now, yeah, I can't think of a better right back in the league for sure than him.
Yeah, I love it. Just wanted to give a shout out to our good friend Tom Canton from the Gooner Talk in the house. He's how are we all doing? Jordan's great. Fantastic piece on Channel 4 about South Asian footballers should be checked out. I will have to check it out. And South London's Finest loves his boys. Big up, Jordan. Just finished watching the pod as someone with cerebral palsy. Big up yourself. You do so many great things. You've got to check out Jordan's work. He's amazing, and what he does in community stories and bringing like really difficult subject matters to the forefront. You know, please do give him a follow and check out his work and stuff. And we'll share all that at the end as well. And just to get Tom's comment on Ben White too. If you appreciate Ben White, he will die for you. I don't think he felt that from England, but he does from Arteta. Just my opinion. And I think a lot of these players will die for Mikel Arteta. They'll die for him, Jordan, in the league. They'll die for him in the Champions League as well. And we have a massive, massive game tomorrow night against Porto. A defining moment, another one. I always feel like Arsenal are having to continually prove themselves. You beat City, you've got to prove yourself. You beat Liverpool, you've got to prove yourself. And until we win the big one, I think that's going to be the narrative for the Arsenal. Even if we lose the Premier League by 1 point or on goal difference, this will be the case. And you think that's right? You can't get that respect that Klopp and Pep have, especially. They're on a different pedestal. But even for Mikel Arteta, it will be continual in the criticism until he wins the big one for you?
I think so. And I think the comparison is Mauricio Pochettino. I think the job he did at Spurs was brilliant. Because you've got to judge managers and clubs by the resources they have and their expectations. So for Pochettino to get that Spurs team top four, was it 4 years in a row? And a Champions League final, finished second one season. Tottenham had no business being in the top four, but he did it for maybe 5 years, definitely 4 years in a row. So that's almost the equivalent to City winning the title. Spurs finishing second or third, with what they've got is equivalent to City winning the title, in my opinion. So, but the big but is he didn't win it. We can praise
Pochettino.
But
he also got a lot of love. They got a lot of love as well, Jordan, because of Harry Kane. It didn't come with as much vitriol and criticism and dartboard-esque type narratives, I don't think. The Pochettino years are looked at as a huge success. I think that he did get criticism for not closing or failing the season after the Champions League. Mm. But I think he got away with it a little bit more than Mikel.
That might be, but then Mikel got to spend a lot of money. Poch didn't.
Very true.
So the standard for the expectation for Mikel Arteta at a bigger club, spending bigger budgets, I think there should be a difference in standard there. The point I'm making is that I can praise Pochettino all day long, and I do, but ultimately, fans look at him, and Chelsea fans are looking at him like, you're a loser. Nice guy, can play good football, couple of kids coming through, but ultimately, you're not at that top table party, bro. You're not. So if Arteta's not careful, he will, after a couple of years of this, he'll be looked at as, great job, bro. Really good job. Brilliant. Nice one. But where's the trophies at, bro? Where's the trophies? So I think it's correct that he doesn't get the full respect until we're not Tottenham. Let's have it right. We are not Tottenham. Yeah. We win trophies. Or we're supposed to, at the bare minimum, compete. So if you're not at some point winning those trophies, I do think that comes with an element of bridesmaid, not the bride. So it's harsh, but if you're at a top club like Arsenal spending big money, you've got to be judged by the high standards. Whereas other managers, you know, finishing 10th, you know, Gary O'Neill will get lauded this season and manager of the year maybe, because for Wolves, finishing 9th is big. Yep. For Luton, staying up is big. So for Arsenal, our standard is top two. It's got to be top two, minimum.
Yeah. I'm
going to put a light on. Sorry, it's getting dark. Can I just give me one second? Sorry, guys. Talk about yourselves.
We've got to let Jordan go anyway in about 5 minutes. And he'll be back to answer a lot of your questions, some really great questions that have been coming in. And I agree with Jordan that, you know, Mikel Arteta, as great a job as he's doing, you know, will be judged by winning. But also the thing we've got to be exceptionally careful about is if we don't close the deal in the next couple of years, how do you hold on to those players as well? How do you hold on to the Odegaards, to, you know, dare I even say out loud, Kai Havertz right now, Declan Rice, I think, Saka, maybe difference there, Ben White, but players want to win. And if you're an ambitious player, you want to win. And when these players are hanging out with their buddies at international breaks who are seeing them winning big time, I think that as well, Jordan, is a big fear if we don't start winning, is who stays,
I agree. And I shouldn't say this too loudly, but I will say it. I think the team to watch out for in the next couple of years is Spurs. I think if they continue on what they're doing and they kind of back this manager, Postecoglou, I know. I genuinely think Spurs in a couple of years...
You're going to have to sell me on this one.
I just think that they are building blocks and they've got a manager that is belligerent in his way of playing football. And if they're patient, there'll be some tough times. If they're patient, I'm not saying they'll win a Premier League, but I think they'll be competitive within a couple of years. And to your point about losing players, I think next year Saka's got 2 years left on his deal. I think it's 2 years, maybe three, but I think it's two. So next year you need to start doing the next contract for Saka and for Saliba. I think it's twos. Anyway, my point being, time goes quick. And if you're coming second, third, playing great football, 6-0 Sheffield United, 5-0 Burnley, that's all well and good. Where's the trophies? And Saka at some point would be like, I'm 27 now, I'm 28 now, and I've got no prems. I need to move on. So at some point, Arteta's got to cross that line, not only for his own respect, but to keep the belief of the players that he's got currently with him.
Yeah, I agree. North Bank Dale, people have been saying the same nonsense about Spurs for the last 10 years. I agree with that.
It's a fair point.
There's a lot of comments like that.
I take it back.
You know, it's really funny because I feel like we were the dartboard for so long, but all of a sudden has the Arsenal's kind of become a blueprint for having patience. You know, Mikel Arteta would never have made it at United earlier or Chelsea or City. You know, losing a semi-final of a European trophy against the man you replaced, you know, starting 0-0-0, finishing eighth, all of these things. You know, patience in football is not a value. It's just not something that really happens.
Can I challenge that? Sorry to cut you off there. Can I challenge that a little bit? So I often hear people say, you know, on Talk Sport or on Sky Sports or BBC Sport, they compare what's happening at Arsenal with Arteta with Chelsea. So the Chelsea was the main one. Stick with Potter because, you know, look at Arsenal. Stick with Poch because look at Arsenal. Ten Hag now. Stick with Poch because look at Arsenal. I don't believe in patience for patience' sake. I believe making good decisions. My response to that kind of argument with Potter and Poch wasn't, yes, look at my club, stick with your guy. It was, if you think the guy you've got is not the guy, you've made a mistake, I don't care for 6 months, fire him. I think it's more about good decisions. We have stuck with Mikel Arteta through the bad times because we have decided that, you know what, it's not looking good, but we believe this is the right guy. I think if Chelsea or United with Ten Hag, because Ten Hag will be the next one now to scrutinise between now and May. If United feel that he's the right guy, stick with him, even through finishing seventh. But if you think he's not the right guy and you made a mistake, I don't believe in patience for patience' sake. No, I believe in good decisions. So we stuck with Mikel Arteta, not out of sympathy, not out of patience. It's because we believed that he was the right guy, despite it looking not the case for quite a while.
No, so it's a brilliant point. I totally agree with what you're saying. He definitely had a plan. And to be fair to Mikel Arteta, he has never veered away from his vision ever. And he shouldn't. No, despite what fans like me thought at the time, you know, this is the proof's in the pudding. That's why he's a manager, and I'm on a podcast talking about him. And I see, you know, Ten Hag, are Manchester United going to have that patience? And I think similarly with United and with Tottenham a little bit too, until those two managers have a total team in their image, they won't succeed. But Ten Hag's blown a lot of money. And I think with Arteta, you were able to maybe see, I couldn't see at the start, some fans could, fair to them, right? That there was something, a style or whatever. And I used to say to Kevin, it's the manager. He goes, Soph, it's the players. It is the players. Wait until he has his own team. And now we're seeing an Arsenal in his image. And most managers who succeed build a team in their image. And that's kind of where we want to be. Right, I know you got to go and I want to get you out
on this. That's good. I'm enjoying this.
I'll lead the question in about the Champions League tomorrow night. And it's a good one from Tom. And a lot of you are asking about Jesus and whether he starts tomorrow at left wing. Should we start Trossard? What's your take on tomorrow night? How does your starting 11 look like? And the Porto pickle. It's not going to be easy. And talk about dark arts and shithousery. Mm. They mastered that at home. Mm-hmm. Whether or not we'll allow them to do that at our gaff is totally different. But what do you think, Jordan?
The first thing is we've got to be aware of that. I'm, as I mentioned earlier, when I'm irrationally nervous about tomorrow. I think on paper and the form we're in, there should be a comfortable 3-1. I don't think it will be. I don't think we should disrespect, like I said earlier on, a seasoned European team. We're better than them and we're at home. But they know how to really get to an hour still with their 1-0 lead. And I think what we've got to do is not fall for their time wasting. We can't fall for their dark arts and their diving, because they will do every trick in the book to kill time and kill momentum. And what I liked about Brentford was that they did the same thing. And it's weird because Brentford were probably a good warm-up for tomorrow, because Brentford were killing the clock, wasting time, and we didn't bite. We can't give away cheap fouls and kill ourselves. So I think I'm nervous about tomorrow, but as long as we keep our cool and don't panic. So even worst case, we go 2-2. Even if we go 2-2, don't panic. We can't panic. We've got to stick. I know you're looking nervous there, but we can't. I can see you in your chair like this. I can see you like...
Did you see me squirm right there? It was a total squirm.
2-0. But this is what I mean. The players can't panic and those fans in the stadium can't panic either. We just got to believe in what we're doing. The goals will come. In regards to who I would start, I would start Trossard. Trossard's record starting games isn't actually that good. He's better as an impact sub, I think. But in Europe, he's actually been decent. He's been decent in the Champions League this season so far. I would give Jesus some minutes at some point because I think next season, that's where he'll play. I think next season, Jesus will be moved out to left and even right if we can't get back up for Saka.
Starting over Martinelli, being a starter over Martinelli.
Next season or tomorrow?
The next season.
I think they'll rotate. I think Jesus will play a hybrid role of striker, right wing, and definitely left wing. I think we'll buy a striker, and I think we'll sell Eddie, and I think Havertz will be our second choice striker option. So I would start Trossard tomorrow, but I think if we can get a good lead, I think getting Jesus in that groove for the because at the moment Havertz has got the spot up front, but Jesus does offer something. So I think to get Jesus in, you're looking at that left hand wing. The pictures I saw of Havertz, what I've heard about Havertz, Martinelli, sorry, doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound good. So he could be out for a few weeks. I'd be stunned if he makes the Man City game. So getting Jesus some minutes tomorrow, I think could be key. I think it'll be 2-1. We've been on penalties. I think it's going to be sticky tomorrow.
Oof.
Yeah.
I can't take penalties. Don't want to go down that road. Good question, by the way, Tom. And, you know, Jesus looked a little rusty, but he takes time to get back into his match fitness. And he doesn't come on and light the game on fire when he comes back from injury. I'll definitely start Trossard, but I'd make a sub real early if Trossard's having one of those. Yeah. I've started again and I'm not playing well games. Like at 60 minutes, bring Jesus on the left. I like the idea of Jesus being a deputy for Martinelli for the rest of the season on the left. It's really like playing on the flanks for Manchester City was what he really did, you know, the most. And Reece Nelson, I hear some of you talking about Reece Nelson. I think Reece Nelson's going to come into play as the season goes on as that trump card sub again. And Trossard, I think, is a super sub type. And it's it's great for us to have someone like Jesus to be able to come off the bench. Our bench is looking stronger game after game after game. Right, we're going to have to leave it there now because in 8 minutes, there's another live show. Go into the YouTube channel and check out the link. Go to the Gooners Pod, check out the link. Amy Lawrence coming live from Highbury directly from the North Bank with Magic Mike for a new show from Highbury to the Grove. You are not going to want to miss that at all. Amy's got some phenomenal stories. Great broadcaster and journalist as well. And for us on the Highbury squad, it's the first time that she's appearing. And this is a collaboration between the Gooners Pod and us. I like Jordan, and then he agreed with me, knew he was good, says Tom.
Yeah, if I agree with you're talking rubbish.
You guys will have to have a chat one day. This has been brilliant. Jordan, promise to come back towards the end of the season Okay, cool. I'd like to have you on every week if I could, but I'm gonna reach out and we'll get you on again in a few weeks
so we can talk.
And then let's let everyone and remind everyone where Jordan is. This is his handle, the new show, Not For Clicks. Anything else you want to peddle while you're here?
Very quickly, my other podcast, Whisper It Loudly with Darren Lewis, who was in Croft. My platform, Blackademic spelled with no C's, just
like
K's.
That title.
Check it out as well. I'm everywhere. Go to my Instagram and you'll find all the handles there.
Brilliant. Now, 350 of you in live chat, make sure that you stay here on the channel and go find on the community page or in the live section on the YouTube, the link from Highbury to the Grove with Magic Mike and Amy Lawrence. And until then, squaddies, at ease. I'll be back at 7 p.m. with James Green from Sky Sports News. Until then, enjoy Mike and Amy. We'll see you soon. Jordan, you're the Don. Thank you, mate.
Peace.
Love you.
Enjoy.
See you later. Okay, bye-bye.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.